Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to our FreeCL seminar series. I am absolutely delighted to introduce today's distinguished speaker, Professor Dr. Dirk Zetsche. Professor Zetsche is a full professor of financial law at the University of Luxembourg, and he also holds the ADA chair in financial law. His main research interests lie in inclusive and sustainable finance, investment funds, corporate governance, and cross-border financial services. Professor Zetsche is recognized as one of the leading scholars in the areas of inclusive and sustainable finance. He is author of more than 400 publications, including the leading treatise on collective and alternative investment law and regulation in the EU, and the leading book also on the financial regulation of financial technologies. His latest book on the EU regulation of crypto assets was published by the Cambridge University Press in January 2025. We are very fortunate to have you here with us today, and we're very much looking forward to your presentation. It's a very interesting new topic today, called Towards an EU Impact Finance Framework, and the presentation is typically 30 minutes, which is followed by a Q&A session, so I'm just going to pass the floor to you, and then Professor Ferring has very kindly agreed to chair the Q&A session, so thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your kind introduction. The paper I'm presenting today is, on the one hand, an article that I want to submit in the near future, but the other part of it is that it's conceptual in nature, as I'm going to finish during my sabbatical the book, I have to say, with Oxford University Press on inclusive sustainable finance. That means whatever you say today may end up in my book, and I thank you already for assisting me in that endeavor. Ladies and gentlemen, the case I want to make today is a case against the European Sustainable Finance Framework in one important respect. The European Sustainable Finance Framework aims at ensuring long-termism in the European economy. The case I want to make today is that one of the most beneficial use cases of long-term investments, impact investing, is facing barriers under the existing European Sustainable Finance Framework. And in turn, the framework needs to be revised in certain ways. Ladies and gentlemen, in this regard, we need to understand that traditional sustainable finance based by large-scale liquid investments is facing certain difficulties. In particular, there are greenwashing concerns. Then we have zero evidence that actually the European Sustainable Finance Framework prompted a shift towards sustainable investments. That is, we see certain exclusion strategies applied and a high degree of compliance, and also many funds meeting the requirements of Article 8 and 9, but we do not see an asset shift. That means we see a type of compliance game going on. And there's evidence that the European Sustainable Finance Framework has enhanced the cost of investing. That means no shift in assets with higher costs is a loss in efficiency and investor return. Impact investing is a different approach, and I will define it a little bit going on. It experiences strong growth right now, and it avoids to some extent the downsides of thematic sustainability approaches, as it requires evidence of measurable positive impacts. I gave you the counterpart. Traditional sustainable finance cannot provide this evidence right now. It's, to my knowledge, the first paper on impact finance from a legal perspective looking at the European Sustainable Finance Framework. And our idea is that we may make a contribution to the ongoing reform of the SFDR 2.0, that is the product regulation right now directed at steering investments into sustainable investment funds. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to bring you all on the same level, I'm not sure how much on European sustainable finance regulation you know as much so far, I will introduce you to some basic concepts and point out the pain points that I want you. European Sustainable Finance Framework tries to address three major problems. First, what is sustainability? Sustainability is a huge problem because of the vagueness of the term. And there are very important decisions with regard to sustainability to make. For instance, consider a car, a combustion engine, which is qualified under the European Sustainable Finance Framework as brown technology. But is an electric vehicle any better? It depends on what you look at. When you look at the end of the pipe, nothing comes out. But when you look at the full production chain, when you look at the disaster, the raw earth that you dig out of the African jungle, create through the jungle, when you look at the impact of biodiversity, you can also have a negative assessment of electric vehicles, correct? It all depends on what you look at. The EU Sustainable Finance Framework defines that we look at the end of the pipe. And in this regard, it defines something as green, which, if you take a different perspective, is probably not green. So what is sustainable is one of the key features of the European Sustainable Finance Framework laid down in the taxonomy regulation. Based on qualifications of what is sustainable, you have a broad array of pieces of regulation mandating disclosure. That means first we define what is sustainability, second, we ask you to report on these criteria, and third, we build a layer of fiduciary duties and organizational requirements in professional asset management. That means when you claim to be sustainable in your investment approach, you need to have fitness and appropriateness, you need to have screening, you need to have kind of a data-fied approach to these very assets that you claim to invest. All of this is resting now on a certain classification, which is referred to as double materiality. And that's a very crucial distinction in sustainable finance, because there are two types of risks coming from changing environmental and social pact. One type of risks is a type of risk that you will consider regardless of law. When you buy a piece of real estate on the Maldives with the sea that is rising, you will take precautionary measures with or without law, correct? This is what we refer to as sustainability risk. Then there is, of course, a problem that maybe industrial production in England enhances global warming to some extent, contributes to it to some extent. When you are producing in England, will you consider that what you is doing may impact on the lesser on the Maldives? Probably not, because it's so far away, it's so particular, you can't even provide evidence of your own contribution. You will simply not consider it. There's zero risk that it is attributed to your own balance sheet in a corporate way, in the absence of a few sustainability scandals that we had. So on that basis, this legal distinction is important, because when we are talking about sustainability risks, every prudent risk management approach will consider them anyway. So they will be considered even in the absence of law. But with regard to your impact on sustainability factors, there's a certain market failure likely, and market failures, as we all know, are the reasons to regulate. Third step, let's take a closer look at the definition of sustainability. The European framework defines sustainability in three steps. First, you need to contribute in a positive manner to one environmental good. Let's say you reduce carbon dioxide emissions. On the other hand, you may not do harm to other objectives, in particular five environmental objectives. So that means you contribute to carbon dioxide emissions by driving a lighter vehicle, but you must not do harm, for instance, to biodiversity and water resources. Now there's this problem by definition. You look at the end of the pipe, and the end of the pipe doesn't contribute to negative impacts on biodiversity. So that means by looking at the end of the pipe, you go through this whole test without affecting it. Now, if you define the entry gate in a different way, you will have, of course, different concerns to respond. And now the interesting aspect, this is that we don't stick to the free written for the uncertainty reasons. And after much lobbying of the industry, we got a very detailed catalogue of what substantially contributes and what is significant harm. And let me just tell you. Okay, let me just tell you that this significant catalogue comprises more than 3,000 pages in the official journal. That means we have very detailed regulations. I don't write this, but the European regulation deals, for instance, with so important topics on how much water the toilet lid flushes uses. Just to give you this as one particularities of this framework. I'm not sure whether this is a task for the regulator, by the way, but this is something they spend time on, and that means also there is a certain problem. Let me now introduce you to the second aspect that we need for the argument, which is the definition of impact investing. Impact investing is defined by three features: intentionality, measurability, and profitability. Intentionality means you must be directing investments in the way that you want to achieve change. Second, it must be measurable. That means there must be scientifically robust evidence that you need charge in the end of the lesson. Third, it must be profitable because otherwise it's philanthropy. Yeah? Of course, the Gates Foundation wants to change the world by investing into certain drugs or also vaccines, but it is not interested in profitability. It's just making it. These three features together define impact investing. The traditional impact investor, for instance, would look at a rural community in Africa that suffers from certain problem. For instance, it may be entirely neighborhooded and may have a strong exposure to one type of disease. And at the end of the investment cycle, after investigating to certain financing programs, lucky facilities in many hospitals, we will have decrease on the health side and decrease the social problem of discrimination against people. This is the ideal. The reality of impact investing is very often that you strive because social problems, human medical problems are very severe, and for that reason, there are built-in mechanisms to penalize non-conformance. Across the spectrum of desirable investment approaches, from very traditional without any sustainability ambition to the best ones, so to say, we find impact investing on the very right side. That means that these are the desirable approaches. Of course, the world is risky. That means, like every risky investment strategy, you may suffer losses. But what loss is must be read in light of your ambition. That means that you have only a profit ambition. A non-profitable investment is a problem, but you're not penalized for not meeting ESG targets. In impact investing, see, you're penalized for not meeting ESG targets. The impact of sustainability factors which we want to change are embedded in the investment stream. Now, that means in order to achieve performance goals, carrier interest, bonus, everything that investors get, that investors pay you for as an asset driven you're performing, is conditioned on these project profits and on the profitability. Inside the investment organization, this is how a typical institutional investor looks like. We will have this impact orientation embedded in every single bit. That means you need, as a manager, some ESG data to consider. You need to have an impact strategy. You need to run the impact management every day. That means you need to ask your target investments, have you improved the number of female clients, have you improved the health state with regard to this particular health problem that you're addressing. And the depository is in charge of monitoring everything that's set down in the investment strategy. The depository is typically a bank that holds custody of the assets and determines the payout to both the investment manager and the investors. That means the investment manager doesn't get money if the depository is not happy. And there's a built-in system of checks and balances. And because of the depository, which is usually a long-term oriented, risk-averse institution, investors can sleep for 7 years, and at the end of the investment period, get their money. Everything works out. If everything is disarray, investors will not get a money like us investment fund and just bond gets owned, which is why they set up these structures. So there's market-driven incentive to enforce these schemes. When you now look at across this whole structure, let's say interest parties, then you see that on all of these levels, you need certain changes. So for instance, you need to have certain capital, which is really take the risk without performance. Very often, stay like this, European Investment Bank, go a la Indies, Multilateral Development Banks, usually help by providing a certain portion, let's say, bad signs. And then the profits of the risk-oriented market-based investors is more likely. Then you need to have an impact fund strategy. And of course, the portfolio of investments is then looking particular at the issues that you want to address. Because you're not, say, paid for changing biodiversity, then you're targeted the sales sector or email. Okay, now we learned how the sustainable finance framework defines sustainability. We learned how investments for impact goes. Impact investing, that's in starting point, is the most desirable type of investing because it comes with proven impact, which we cannot say the traditional responsible and sustainable finance approach for. From that perspective, it's interesting to observe whether the European Sustainable Finance Framework, which aims at steering assets for long-term use, is accepted impact investing. And here our insight is, it doesn't. Well, first of all, why? The rigidity of the technical green criteria defining what is sustainability is, to a certain extent, and kind of state-of-the-art of what engineers defined to be sustainable in the year 2019, because it became law in 2020 and is still valid today. And just to give you an idea how this looks like, this is typical steering criteria. And you see here that, for instance, the water supply system must comply with the directive that was implemented here in 2020. And when you try to apply this in the middle of Africa, FPA. No one knows what this directive refers to. That means you need to translate, as an index investor, all of these specifications over 3,000 pages in plain language. The other problem is, of course, that many of these criteria interact. And then now comes the problem. As an index investor, you're focusing on health and baby female issues. But remember what sustainability requires, it's not sufficient to attribute to one goal. You also need to provide evidence, the onus is on you as institutional investor, that you do not harm any of the other objectives of ESG. That means you need to provide evidence that you don't harm the bee population. You need to provide evidence that biodiversity is not impacted by what you do. The problem is not whether there is any event when we have certain data. But the reality of the world is when you have to collect 186 data points to make the positive evidence that in many of places where you may impact, these data points simply don't exist. I have advised 70 central banks of developing countries, and with each of them, they get a question for me, how many of these data points do you have? And they're happy when they have 20. That means, in most of the cases, impact investing is facing the barrier that the regulatory requirements cannot be provided. And that is particularly bad for the planet, because very often you have a problem that where puts most you need to invest to make change. To give you an example here once again, when you're outside of Europe, the reality of lorries is 40 liters per 100 kilometers. Because these are the ancient things, the ancient filters. We sell them, and they're usually on the ship to the other places on the road. That means what we exclude here continues to be driven in the other parts. So how do you make an impact? Quite simple. You reduce from 40 liters to something else. What something else? Well, a modern lorry would buy at 8 liters, maybe, or 10 liters, right? That means going from 40 to 10 would be impact savings of 75%. Correct. But for bus, you can't do it because you reveal the issues of the technical screening here. I would say, if you invest into combustion engines, it is wrong. It's not real. And that means you can't do it as an impact. So why you use this example? Because the rigidity of this technical definition is such that it has a certain picture of sustainable investment in mind, which is not in line with the true impact problems that we had in the world. When you provide impact, you have three problems. First, you have only data shortages, that we have severe data shortages. Second, you have problem to generate the impact, of course. And the third is, if you want to achieve the impact, it's a very costly organization already, because you need to engage on a daily basis. If you invest into these engagements, you don't have the money anymore to collect all the other things that surround your investment. But which you need to achieve compliance. And the result, the story says this, that true impact funds cannot claim to be either the 8 or the 9 funds, so sustainable investment funds. Another European framework, because dang, what is usually sustainability compliance with the taxonomy. We come to the main problem that the most sustainable investment approaches don't comply with the sustainability definition of European law. That's not absurd. It results, right? This is really absurd. So, of course, now you have this whole problem here that the European sustainability criteria, which have been defined in 2019-20, don't require any evidence on sustainability impacts at the end of the investment year. There is no mechanism in that regard. That means what we get under the European sustainable framework is that the compliance objectives are qualified as sustainability, that not sustainability risks. And this is a state which we believe must be changed. We have another other problems, but I don't want to go into the details too much here. Let's just ask ourselves what has to be done to get from this unfortunate state to a desired state. And of course, in this regard, one thing we looked at is the SFDR to zero. Big question, because this is a sustainability seminar. Who had looked at the SFDR to zero, the revised version of the sustainable finance disclosure regulation? Yeah, she sat to it. But let me give you a quick
sustainability classes in 2 weeks, like.
Okay, good. Okay, so then let me just raise one starting note. The sustainable finance disclosure regulation is basically labeling certain investment classes. And in the past, we had three different classes, one non-qualified, one, let's say, CV qualified, aiming at certain changes, and then the third hardest part, aiming at sustainable investments in the sense of the taxonomy of FOSH. In the understanding of European Institutes and Market Authority, even the second best class must consider the taxonomy regulation when they claim to UV sustainable. That means if you use the term sustainable, you must refer to the taxonomy regulation. That's something in the name. Yeah? It's a name regulation which has a severe impact also on this qualification. And that means we have basically three categories, and the impact funds only qualify under the non-classified US. That means when you're an impact investor, you must avoid the term sustainability in your own prospectus. You must not say, I am aiming at anything which sounds like sustainable. Otherwise, you're trapped for greenwashing because you don't need the regulatory qualifications. That means even if you prove the sustainability impact, you cannot really express it in terms because you're not compliant. Now, the SFDR 2.0, which is a reform proposal, which has been issued beginning of December last year, tries to remedy that by removing certain relevance of the taxonomy, and at the same time introduced a new product degree, and it's called transition. I use this limited German by nature. A transition, my traditional understanding, means that at the end of the transition process, you have the better say, correct? Okay, that means when you invest for transition purposes, you start brown and end up green. That would be traditional transition, right? All right. It's interesting when you now read the SFDR, because transition can, for instance, be when you are 50% taxonomy compliance and 85% brown, and nothing changes over the whole investment period. I don't understand how they get the defects. Yeah, but I share that the idea is a strong lobbyism force behind this.
Why don't we want changes? Because when you have changes, the problem comes. What do you do where there are no changes? How do you penalize, in traditional exclusion strategy, the asset managers who have not changed, affected AG? We saw that there is no shield in assets. The only thing that we have is enhanced compliance, but no shield in assets. It means we have four categories, 8 and 9, but we don't have any asset base changing. That means the whole idea of the European Sustainable Finance Acquis Plan has not worked. And in such a way, when everyone knows it doesn't fly, what does industry do? Give us a category where we can check the box and make sure that we agree, regardless of what happens. So I buy 50% overpriced green assets, and for 85% they can do whatever. Yes, great, and transition. You know, this is how politics works. And this is exactly the problem of the European framework that they're path dependent. I had a talk with ESMA last Friday, and we went through the whole taxonomy, and I told them, well, but you do get a giant greenwashing thing, correct? You tell the world that we do something for the planet. We post cost on the investor for improving the planet. And at the end of the investment period, we have not done anything to save the planet. The planet is as poor in terms of sustainability as before. And rather than getting only data estimates, because 186 data points, 20 of them are well, that means rest remainder are just estimates, we also get a legal estimate. Because when you invest in Brazil, the local lawyer has to certify combined with Directive 2020 for the 711, which he has never seen in his life. And imagine when you have to ascertain that a local investment chart complies with 3,000 pages. Either this is absurdly costly or it is absurdly non-reliant. It's just a legal estimate and the data estimate, which together give you the idea of green. Sorry, gentle gentlemen, this is greenwashing. Regulatory inspired greenwashing. This had nothing to do with impact, nothing to do with changing the climate. I'm definitely not green in my inner soul, but I don't like the idea that we waste billions and billions from investor assets into compliance efforts when we don't help the planet, because that's the money that we take from the petroleum. That's the money that we take from the social systems that rely on the income from these institutional investments. They're talking about 2 billion in the European industry and 40 billion in the pension funds. This is a joke word. So 22 trillion and 40 trillion. Okay? So this is the middle of mine. And these are the own institutional savings of Europe, misguided by this framework. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, this must change. So how can it change? Well, first of all, we must remove from negative impacts to positive impacts. The whole framework of Europe speaks avoiding negative impacts. Why don't we ask aim at positive impacts? Why don't we just say positive impacts is what we need to aim at? Avoiding negative impacts, loser title. No, positive impact where we want to go. And that leads me to recognize this actively. And when we do so, then we can, for instance, look at the Swiss framework, but also in the four brands of the UK framework, the latest one on disclosure, there is recognition of positive impact. So that is something that EU framework needs. And of course, the whole framework must be reminiscent on that. That means, for instance, when you look about the carried interest, the bonus of the managers and so on, that all of that has also an impact component when you claim to be an impact. But the other thing is that we want to change, and now this is a bit technicality, but in very poor words, that you should change lawlessness proof with regard to do not significant harm. What is the most significant harm again? A check. It's a check on whether you sacrificed all the rest when you were just pursuing one goal. Then let's take this literally. A normal investor will look at its main focus and only check for negative impacts when there are data points suggesting there is a negative. So I want to change it in one way. Right now, you have to screen across the 3,000 pages whether you have violated them, and when you have violated them, you cannot claim to commit to do not significant checkers. But of course, sensibly, because we like the data, most funds that invest outside of Europe for impact, but also some inside of Europe for impact, lacks simply the data, so that the lack of data leads to a negative check the box and do not significant harm. Why not taking do not significant harm literally? Other ESG factors are not worse off due to the investments made, as so far a good starting point, but let's take what we have in terms of reliable public data. And if there are no data, then the lack of data in the beginning is check the box. Yes, do not significant harm. But if new data comes up, there shall be an honest proof to show that with regard to those data points that have come up, there is no negative attitude. Where's the difference? What usually happens in terms of impact in this is that you get a number of companies that need to invest in Africa, and then you have a full list of prohibitions which you shut down in China. Right now, this list of prohibitions is not enough. Right now, you have to have proof that the bee population wasn't training during the time that you were investing to enhance female positions. That is a link which is not very clear, correct? For that, no one is a data. In the future, if there is negative information on the female or the female strategy that impacts on bees, then collect data and provide proof other way around. But don't prohibit the investment simply because you don't have the data exempt. There is a reverse burden of proof which will make a huge impact, but retain the main and good principle that you simply cannot sacrifice other environmental perspectives or else. So then, of course, we need a plain language revision of the taxonomy regulation. And I believe the best is to go from law to something like a supervised industry service. Again, we discussed this fact, yeah, that these type of beef out pages is just an engineering's dream, I have to say. So, yeah, it's engineers, they're sitting together and writing some types of standards which they really are today into the very piece of legislation. I'm sorry, this has nothing to do with principled law. Principled law is this 1, 2, 3, focal contribution, do not significant harm, minimum social safeguard, sustainability test, that's law. But the application of the test is not law. That's an industry subject. And you write it, the law will be outdated by the time that it flies. Check these norms, 2009, ILO 2020, official journal. Application starts in 1st of January 2023. That means 4 years after these standards have been written into law, they take application time. Yeah? And of course, the world has turned this. Yeah? They're making new solutions since. So let's be fair, do and follow the UK, remove the taxonomy as mandatory piece of law and turn it into an ISO standard. Of course, there shall be state of the governing developing the standards so that it cannot be easily manipulated. And so I have to say that state involvement in Europe hasn't helped, as you can see with the example of electric vehicles. There was also, of course, manipulation to these. Well, and then of course, the due proportionality between systemic risk concerns and impact finance. An example which we have in the European Investment Fund, which I don't go through to go into detail, as open new generous boxes, that we are very restrictive in debt funds, providing debt instruments, and that's correct. And they're very large, and when they land banks, when you land to a small institution in the middle of Africa, then there's more systemic risk. And so it's disproportionate in the world. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a fundamental problem of financial regulation when we move outside of the established spheres of finance. Sustainability regulation is something that financial regulators have no experience with, so they regulate in the dark. Huh? On this basis, we need to know what is the whole purpose of this. Investors want impact, they don't want compliance. Compliance is a different word for cost, right? That means we want the positive impact and we need to have framework that can argue we achieve the impact. Right now, the European Sustainable Finance Framework doesn't achieve that. And the case of impact investing reveals to a certain extent the limits. Now, when we want to provide a high degree of ESG certainty, we sacrifice the true purpose of the original legislative proposal. So we need to bring in a bit more flexibility, a shed, maybe not so little bit of legal uncertainty, and think of why we regulate in the first place. So this is really a butch type of understanding why we regulate. First, there shall be proven evidence of market failures. Regulators shall only regulate when they have expertise and resources. Otherwise, they are just regulating bad things. Then You need to focus for regulation. That means market failures and focus go hand in hand. The European framework tries to govern more than 85% of the world economy, and I doubt that those financial regulators who have to apply it have any understanding of these different industries. So that's maybe not a good thing. Maybe they should just take the scandals and the profits. And then, of course, one problem on this envisioning framework is that they want to have equal weights on all these startup ones, equal weights on all these criteria in their technical screening summits. Ladies and gentlemen, that is not good, because the key aspect of disclosures in financial regulation is that focus disclosure on material facts, not on all facts. So materiality is a core principle of financial disclosure. Otherwise, you can bury the important facts under the other one. Again, here, the key problem under the taxonomy regulation. This is, by the way, a bit better in the current proposal for reforming the corporate sustainability reporting disclosure. It's reporting directly. So, and then ensure openness to innovation, get rid of the legal character of the technical screening criteria, retain a certain vagueness, work with ISO standards to bring them down, but avoid the mandate in character of law, where it is harming the planet, despite good intentions. With that, I thank you for your attention. I look very much for the discussion.